Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this Saturday, September 4th, 2010. As we discuss the world of sports, and as we transition into probably the best time, or not probably the best time of the sports year. We got the opening weekend of college football. You've already had some games played. You had the NFL coming up in roughly a week. U.S. Open is well underway. You have the baseball playoff races heating up. Not that many races in baseball, but you still have the NL West, the NL Wild Card, and the American League East, which will certainly go down to the wire. So a different type. So, you know, summer's over. A little bit of weekend kind of knocked that out. Summer's over, but now, just because summer's over doesn't mean we cannot have fun with the sports world. And we're going to begin with Ben Roethlisberger, whose suspension was shortened to 4 games, of course. And frankly, he's very fortunate. People forget, you know, despite the fact that he had all these great things said about him, you know, over the course of the last couple of months in terms of how he's become more mature, you know, how contrite he was. You forget where he was at a few months back when all this stuff went down with the girl down in Georgia. So for him to only get 4 games, I'm telling you, a lot of you could have did him a favor. Because Roger Goodell could have easily gave Roethlisberger 8 games and could have just said, hey, I'll shoot it in a 6. For him to get 4 games in, I agree with the decision. Listen, give him 6, shorten it to 4. He said all the right things. He's done the charities. He's done everything he's been asked to do ever since the decision was made about the 6-game suspension, to start. So I can understand it being shortened to 6 games. I mean, to 4 games. But again, he is very, very fortunate. If you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, if you look at the games you're going to miss, you should be able to go 2-2. I mean, you're home to Atlanta, you're on the road against Tampa Bay, you're on the road against Tennessee, and then you're home to Baltimore. You should be able to win 2 of those games. You definitely should be able to win the Tampa Bay game at Tennessee, home to Baltimore, home to Atlanta. You should beat Tennessee. You should beat Tampa and split between one of your home games with Baltimore and Atlanta. I mean, you should be able to win 2 of those games. That will put you at 2-2 when he gets back. Week 6. They have a bye in week 5. He'll be back in week 6. So, again, Pittsburgh should consider themselves very fortunate from that standpoint, because it could have been a lot worse with this situation. I mean, again, a few months ago, this was looking like, I mean, you know, there were questions of whether or not he was going to play a season. You know, could he be suspended for the season? Could he be suspended half the season? And Roger Goodell really went out of his way to give him another chance, to give him another shot to get himself together. And again, I give Roethlisberger credit. He has said the right things. He has done the right things. He's been, you know, he was contrite in terms of his apologies. He stayed in his lane, so to speak. You know, he hasn't gone out and pulled a Michael Vick and did something stupid as far as, you know, having a public party where you got guys out you know, taking shots at each other. So he's been smart about the choices that he's made ever since the suspension. But, you know, the day is good. And I already thought about this, yesterday when, I'm watching their coverage for this. Goodell could have easily gave him an 8-12 game suspension. Easily. There would have been no backlash. I mean, maybe the Players Association with the club would have been bitching and moaning, but in all reality, there would have been too much backlash from anybody else. So, Roethlisberger will be back. You know, this may be the first month of the season. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, has a quarterback situation where, you really don't know who's going to be the starter right now. It should be Dennis Dixon, because you can't start Charlie Batch. I mean, there's no way you can start Charlie Batch. I know a lot of people have been kind of wondering whether or not Pittsburgh should go in that direction. I'm going to give a simple answer. Absolutely not. Should I start Charlie Batch? Charlie Batch was at one time was top backup quarterback in the league. He was no longer at that level. He is, to me, the definition of an emergency quarterback, and you have those. This is a guy who, to me, fits perfectly in what your offense is like now. Pittsburgh does not have a great offensive line. They're a mediocre offensive line at best. You have a guy who can move the pocket with. You have a guy who can break off a 65 yard touchdown run. And you have a guy who has a lot of confidence in his own ability. You saw him last year, Sunday Night Football, come in against Baltimore, and almost beat the Ravens, forced the game, goes overtime, Ravens win the game. But that, to me, that showed me that this guy was not afraid of the moment, afraid of the big stage, and I would feel comfortable with Dennis Dixon. I know he struggled against Denver last week, preseason game. I'm not going to go too crazy about that. So Dennis Dixon, I think in a way it was a blessing in disguise for Leftwich to get hurt, because Leftwich at this point in his career is a sick duck in the pocket. He cannot move. He's had an assortment of injuries, of leg and knee injuries. He just couldn't move. I mean, there was once a time where Leftwich was a pretty nifty scrambler, but those days are long gone. So you have a guy, Dennis Dixon again, who can move the pocket, and they have weapons. I mean, Mike Wallace, they still got the tight end who's pretty good. Very good. They have guys on the outside that they can get the ball to. Yeah, you get the ball to. So Dennis Dixon should be their starting quarterback once their season opens next week. So we're kind of on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We will preview the SEC. Can anybody stop the tide from rolling to a better championship? We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Real Quinn. 10 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour, taking you, of course, to the 10 o'clock hour on this Saturday, first weekend of September, and we're gonna take a look at the SEC conference, which year in year out has been the premier conference in the country. Has been dominated basically by, you think about it, over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, really Florida, LSU, and now Alabama have dominated this conference. You think about what Alabama has done in the past 2 years. They've gone undefeated in the regular season. They are 24 and 0 in the past two regular seasons. Well, of course, the last two seasons they're 26 and 2. With their last, with their two losses coming, you know, last season, the season before last, against Florida and of course Utah, in a game which they absolutely just, you know, couldn't care less about. Once they lost the SEC championship to Florida, they were out of the bids to become to win a national championship, and they basically melted out that Sugar Bowl win, of course. So they have had a tremendous run of late in the past couple of years. And to me, I'm looking at a reason. I'm looking at them, and I'm seeing what they lost. You know, they lost a lot of players on Rolando McQuaid on defense, Terrence Cody, Javier Arenas, and all. I mean, lost a lot of talent defensively. But they're going to come back. They're going to come back with as good a group offensively as any team, in terms of the skill positions, as any team in the country. McAvoy outplayed Tim Tebow in the SEC championship. He should be better. He should be better as his third year of starting. They had one of the best running games outside of your test in the country with Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson. Ingram will be out this first game against San Jose State. Won't mean anything. That'll be like a tune-up anyway. So he's expected to be back probably in the next couple of weeks. He's not going to miss a lot of time. And then you have, of course, Julio Jones on the outside, who is one of the top receivers in the country. They're going to score a lot of points. They're going to score a ton of points. They're going to be more offensive-minded. The question will be their defense. Now, again, a Nick Saban team is never going to be a bad defensive team. Would it be as dominant as it was defensively? No. But they're still going to create turnovers. They're still going to confuse people. Alabama, to me, is still going to be Alabama. And I don't see any reason why this year they don't win the SEC. Why they're not going to go out there and win the SEC again and find themselves in a position to win another national championship. Because the thing about the SEC is you can lose a regular season game and play for the national championship. That's how tough the conference is. Though I don't think the conference will be as tough as it has been. So I can see Alabama losing one game in the regular season and still finding their way to the national to the SEC championship come December. As far as Florida goes, Florida is ranked number 3 in the USA Today Coaches Poll, number 4 in the Associated Press Poll. I think Florida is a little bit overrated. You look at the talent they lost, and again, they lost a lot. They lost about 6 stars on defense, including Brandon Spikes, and we'll get to Brandon Spikes later on in the program, as he's had a very interesting, it was an interesting week for Mr. Spikes. Tim Tebow, Aaron Hernandez, not even some of Aaron, but Tim, you can't lose a player. And again, I think Tim Tebow may be one of the most overrated players in college football history. I've never been a big Tim Tebow fan, but he still was, for the better part of 3 years, he was the face of college football, and he certainly was the face of Florida Gator football. And you don't lose one of the most accomplished players in recent memory and not take a hit. I don't know much about John Brantley. I've been hearing good things about him. He's been watching Tim Tebow for three years now. So I know he's good at holding a clipboard, but that doesn't mean that he's good, that he's going to be able to take over a team that is a champion, that was championship caliber after the last couple of years, and take them to the championship. Put them in a position to win a championship. I think Florida will win 9-10 games. I think this is a year that you can get Florida. I really do. I think this is a year that you can pick Florida off. I understand they are in the they are in the weakest of the SEC divisions by far and away. I mean, you know, Alabama has to deal with the likes of LSU, and Alabama has to deal with the likes of LSU and Arkansas and some of those teams. But I think Florida is kind of, you know, certain teams, when you have a continued success year in and year out, sometimes you get that reputation ranking. You know, you get a ranking based on, you know, what you have done in the past, and it really doesn't reflect on where your team is at in that particular year. I think that's the case with Florida this year. It's Florida a top 15, top 10 team, probably. Are they a top 3, top 4 team? I don't think so. I think they will struggle to win their division. It would not surprise me at all if they did not win their division. If somebody came out of there and surprised them, whether it be a Georgia, whether it be a South Carolina, whatever, one of those teams, I think one of those teams can possibly take Florida out and win that division. So I think Florida will play in the January 1st bowl, but I do not think they will be in a BCS bowl come January. As far as the surprise team in the SEC goes, I have to look at Arkansas as being their surprise team. Arkansas, they had the big-time quarterback. They have a great offense. They're in a division that, to me, is up for grabs. With Florida being down, you know, Georgia, you never know what you're going to get out of Georgia. They always have a ton of talent. They never seem to live up to that talent. You know, Tennessee is rebuilding. Kentucky and Vanderbilt, they are at the bottom feeders of that division. I'm looking at Arkansas' schedule. Their tough games, or most of their tough games, are at home. Home to LSU. So those games that they, so, you know, the good news for them is those games that they were, that they, their toughest games would be at home. They had the big-time quarterback, a guy who has a chance to be the number one pick in the draft, in Ryan Mallett. Their offense is going to put up points. The question is their defense. The question will be their defense, which couldn't stop anybody last year, but that did not stop them from going 8-5. But 3-5 in the SEC is not bad. You know, 3-5 in the SEC would be probably 5-3 in another conference. I expect Mike Petrino to improve that defense, and I think Arkansas could. Arkansas, don't be surprised to see an Arkansas-Alabama SEC championship. Overall, I think the SEC, again, will be strong. I do not think the SEC will be the best conference in college football this year. I think you look from top to bottom, Florida's not as good as they were last year. Alabama's not going to be as good as they were. You know, LSU is kind of one of those teams that are right in the middle. I mean, they're a top 20 team, but they're not a championship caliber team. South Carolina could be a little bit better. Tennessee, not going to be as good. But I think overall, the SEC is not going to be. Auburn could be a little better. Maybe Auburn probably will be around the same. So I think overall, the SEC will be a little bit down this year. But you'll get some great games. I mean, the Florida-Alabama game will be a classic, October 2nd. You know, the largest cocktail party in the world, Georgia, Florida, always is good. The Iron Bowl, Auburn, Alabama, always is a great game to end the season on that Thanksgiving weekend. So, I mean, you're going to get some great football. But overall, I just don't think the conference will be as good as it has been in the past couple of years. Still to come on this first edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We will preview the ACC. Can anybody stop Virginia Tech? But before that, I will tell you what the Vikings, Cowboys, and Jets all have in common, and we will get into some Friday Night Baseball as well. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking your course till the 10 o'clock hour. On this first Saturday in September, Labor Day weekend. Hope you enjoy your Labor Day. Be safe with the travel, especially if you're on the Atlantic coast in terms of that Hurricane Earl. It's not going to be too serious, but you wouldn't want to be nowhere near the Outer Banks of, say, North Carolina or even North Carolina or anywhere near that coast over the course of the next couple of days. We're going to look at some baseball here. And, you know, as the weeks go by, the races are getting, the races are starting to disappear. I mean, you think about it, when I'm looking at the standings yesterday, I'm like, about 3 weeks ago, you had a great race in the NL Central with Cincinnati, and St. Louis. The whole National League, you had great races. The entire National League. From the Central to the East to the West, the Wild Card. American League, you had the American League East, the Wild Card, and the American League Central. Now, it's kind of gotten, those races have begun to just have shrunk in the last couple of weeks. I mean, Cincinnati has ran away and hid from St. Louis. I mean, ever since St. Louis swept Cincinnati, they can't beat anybody else. The only team that St. Louis can beat is Cincinnati. I mean, they're losing the teams within their own division outside of Cincinnati who don't even have a winning record. They have a losing record within their division outside of Cincinnati. If you look at their record against the Cubs, Brewers and I'm leaving out our team for a reason. Pirates. And of course, I would leave them out. They have a losing record to those three teams combined. That's why they're in the predicament they're in right now, seven games out. Despite the fact that they were able to beat Cincinnati yesterday 3-2, they're still seven games out. And again, my September rule is if you're two or more games out. That's a lot of ground to make up. A lot of ground to make up once you get to the month of September. And you even look at the AL Central with Chicago and Minnesota. Minnesota, again, that race at one point was a game, half game, tied. Minnesota has, it's kind of pushed in that day. Has been anywhere around from 3 to 4 games over the past few weeks. They're not going to catch Chicago's not going to catch Minnesota. Even American League East, the Yankee-Tampa Bay race is a great race, but both of those teams are two best teams in baseball right now, and both of those teams are going to the playoffs, so it doesn't quite have the same bit of drama that it would have if one of those teams was not going to make the playoffs. Forget about the AL wild card, because it's either going to be the Yankees or Tampa Bay. Now, National League, you do have a race in the National League East. Last night, the Phillies behind the brilliance of Cole Hamels, Cole Hamels is 9-10. Cole Hamels has not had a 9-10 year. Cole Hamels in the last, say, month, ever since the All-Star break, Cole Hamels has been great. He's been in, I think he's pitched in 4 1-run games. Unfortunately, he has been on the losing end of a couple of those games. He's pitched as well. He's pitched this year, I think, he's pitched as well this year as he did even when 2 years ago when they won the championship and when he was the National League NLCS MVP and the World Series MVP as well. I mean, he's pitched that well over the course during this year. They just haven't been able to give him enough run support over the course of his starts. So they win last night. Atlanta, who has joined, San Diego as well as St. Louis, are in a free fall. Their starting pitcher can't get anybody out. They're one game behind They are one game ahead of, just staying one game ahead of Philadelphia. And I think Philadelphia is probably going to catch them. Probably going to catch Atlanta for that last spot. I mean, for that NL East race. In the NL East, I think Atlanta will find a way to get the wild card, though. I think their pitching, they will get their pitching back, get their pitching back together, find a way to get the wild card. You go west with San Francisco and San Diego. San Diego is three games ahead. Of course, both teams lost last night. Three games ahead of San Francisco, four games in a loss column, which is the most important one. Four games in a loss column is a lot. There's a lot to make up. San Diego has already had it. I mean, they've had their major losing streak. At some point, they're going to break out of this and start winning some games. And seeing in San Francisco, when San Diego's losing seven straight, San Francisco, took somewhat advantage, but didn't take enough advantage in terms of that. They're 5-6 in their last 11 games, so they haven't played particularly well. The bad news for the Giants is they can't beat San Diego. They were in their season in San Francisco against the hosting the Padres, but San Diego over the course of the season is like 9-2 against the Giants. So that's what San Diego has going for them. I think San Diego wins that division, and I think San Francisco will fall short as far as making the playoffs. And I think you'll have Atlanta, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, and San Diego in the postseason. But it would shock me if San Francisco won that division. No, it wouldn't, because San Diego is one of these teams that you felt like when you was wondering when their pitching was going to slow down and when they were going to, they were just counting on their pitching. You have to be able to score runs, because you're not going to be able to pitch on the level that they were pitching at for 162 games. And your pitching is going to go through a stretch where your relievers are struggling, where your starters can't get anybody out, and you have to have an offense to carry you. That's why the Yankees are so lethal, because they don't always have to have a guy go out there and throw, eight innings and give up one or two runs. They can have an AJ Burnett struggle for a month or 2 months and then be able to score enough runs where they can still win games. So this is the time of year where you have to be able to put runs on the board. Because bottom line is bullpens are shot right now. Bullpens are tired. It's, dog days of August. I know we're into September now, but you're at a point in time where you're in, game 135, game 140, come upon 135, 140 games, these guys' arms are tired. There's no getting around it. Even for the guys who are the most durable players, they're still going to wear down a bit as far as the pitching goes. So, of course, last night, again, San Francisco falling, losing to the Dodgers. You had the Yankees beating Toronto. Tampa Bay won, so Tampa Bay trying to, of course, keep pace with the Yankees. Two games back. St. Louis winning. St. Louis is going to have to sweep that series in order to make to even have a chance to catch Cincinnati. Even if they sweep the series, they'll still be five games back. Of the Cincinnati Reds. There's no way. It's not going to happen. I mean, they're not going to catch Cincinnati. Cincinnati's going to win that division. Joey Votto's going to be the MVP. Votto and Albert Pujols buying for that in Triple Crown. And there's one other guy who has now snuck into the mix of the Triple Crown. It's Carlos Gonzalez, who has been the hottest hitter in baseball over the last month. He leads the league. He leads the National League in batting average. He's third in RBIs, and he's fifth in home runs. So keep an eye on him as far as the Triple Crown as well. I don't think any of them are going to get the Triple Crown, but now you have three guys in that mix for the Triple Crown. Also, this week is a busy weekend in baseball for the Washington Nationals. Steven Strasburg had Tommy John surgery on Friday, so he's expected to be back anywhere from 12 to 18 months. So, again, that is the worst thing that could have possibly happened to the Washington internationals. But again, the good thing for him is he's only 21, 22 years old. He should be back and should come back strong. And Nigel Morgan, who is now, who might be the most hated man in baseball right now, gets an additional 8 games on top of the 7-game suspension that he had received for allegedly throwing the ball at a fan in Philadelphia. Again, that suspension is being appealed, but he gets an 8-game suspension for his role in the fight they had against in that 16-10 loss against the Marlins, where Chris Paul started threw at him twice, he charges the mound, and then all hell breaks loose. And also, he came after the Marlin catcher when the catcher was still standing up, didn't even tag home, was called out because Ivan Rodriguez touched him before he could tag home. Ivan Rodriguez was trying to tell him to go tag home. So it has not been a good week for Nigel Morgan. I would be really surprised if he's on the team next year. I think the Nationals have had, have had their fill of him. The guy has a 3-7. He's a leadoff hitter. He has a 3.17 on base percentage. So it's not like he's had a productive year. He's been an average player at best this year, and he's been a chill. Just baseball instincts. He's hard. I mean, base running just makes bonehead plays. He's not had a good year, so I did not expect him to be in a Washington Nationals uniform come 2011. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, we will look at the ACC. Virginia Tech looks to continue to have its stranglehold on the conference, and will that stranglehold carry over to a national championship? We will talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn. You can hit me up at www.twitter.com/WilliamGerald. If you have any comments on the program, any comments on the topics that I'm discussing, you also can hit me up at facebook.com/SurrealQuinn, CYRIL. I have to spell that because, there are lots of people trying to get that mixed up sometimes. Surreal Quinn. Hit me up on my Facebook page. Again, if you have any comments, questions, you want to take a shot at me, fine, take a shot at me. I love opinions. I love a great debate. So hit me up. Good to be back after a couple weeks off, trying to get this football stuff together. And good to have football back. You love the summertime, you love the vacations, but there's nothing like this time of year when you have college. And we had the NFL, and then college football as well, and then these next 10 days, the U.S. Open, and the baseball playoffs, not that far away. Saturday morning headlines: 12 players have been ruled out. 12 players have been ruled out. The Chick-fil-A opening game, the Chick-fil-A kickoff, which North Carolina, which is ranked number 18, will take on the number 21 first ranked team, LSU. The most important number is 8, and that's 8 starters. And the majority of guys are big time players. You're talking about Robert Quinn, Marvin Austin, you're talking about a bunch of North Carolina's defensive players, Kendrick Burney, Quan Devon, Bruce Carter, Dante Williams. They're missing a ton of their defensive players. Their numbers have been all over the place. I mean, I looked at three different websites. One website, the Charlotte Observer had North Carolina holding 15 players out. You have ESPN had 12 players out. But anyway, the most important number is 8. The fact that there are 8 starters out of that game. Ben Roethlisberger has been banned for 4 games. His suspension has been cut from 6 games to 4 games by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Ben Roethlisberger will be able to return to practice during the week of the Cleveland game, which is October 17th. That'll be the first game he'll be eligible to play. Roethlisberger will miss the first 4 games of the season, in which Pittsburgh will be playing against Atlanta, at Tennessee, home to Tampa Bay. We'll host Atlanta, be at Tennessee, at Tampa Bay, and host Baltimore. Then they get an October 10th bye. He can start practicing with the team on October 4th, which is very important. He's suspended, and understand this, he can't even be around facilities. He can't be in the stadium. He can't watch. He doesn't watch the game. Basically, he can be at home or at a sports bar or something. He can't even be nowhere. He can't be anywhere near any NFL facility as far as Pittsburgh Steelers goes until October 4th. So he's going to have to find somewhere, and I'm sure the Steelers will hook something up where he's throwing the football. Lifting weights, that would be no problem. I'm sure there's a valley somewhere in Pittsburgh that Tim Roethlisberger can find, and he can try to stay in shape. And also, Nigel Morgan has been suspended 8 games for his role for a number of things, but mainly for his role in the brawl between the Florida Marlins and Washington Nationals back on Wednesday. Morgan suspended for 8 games for that. Also for his role in trying to take out a catcher. It's not the hit that he separated the catcher's shoulder with. It was the day before that when he hit the catcher when the catcher wasn't looking and didn't touch home plate. And this is on top of the 7-game suspension he received for allegedly throwing the ball at a fan in Philadelphia. So there are your Saturday morning headlines. Now we head to the ACC, where when you start with ACC football, you have to start with the Hokies of Virginia Tech, who are sporting some new Nike uniforms that are supposed to be, I don't know if it's dry fit technology, but Nike has about 10 different teams with these new type of uniforms that, again, are supposed to absorb perspiration, supposed to help a team out in terms of their conditioning, whatever. Nike has, there are 10 different uniforms. I see a couple of them not feeling. Virginia Tech looks pretty decent, but a couple of them not feeling at all. But we'll see as the season. We'll see all of them doing it over the course of the season. But the Virginia Tech, make no mistake about it, there. And I think the ACC, this is a shut up year for the ACC as a conference. They will play a number of teams, non-conference teams, whether it be Ohio State, Pittsburgh, Georgia Tech, ACC has a chance to really make some hay for this year. I mean, really do. They're taking a beating because they're 2-10 in their BCS games over the last couple of years. They haven't appeared in the national championship game since 2001 with Florida State, was lost to Oklahoma. So this is a big year for ACC to step up. And I believe they have a chance to do that. And, of course, it begins in Blacksburg with Virginia Tech, who I think has a legit chance to win a national championship this year. I don't think Boise State is going to beat Virginia Tech in D.C. Look at their running game. It's the best running game in college football, in my opinion. Ryan Williams, who had almost about 1,700 yards last year, filling in for Darren Evans, who the year before, in 2008, they broke the ACC freshman record with close to 1,300 yards. Those two, to Rod Taylor at quarterback, all he has to do, doesn't have to make a lot of great plays. use his playmaker ability. Also make a, you know, he's a decent thrower. He's not anything. He's like a 4 minute Tavares Jackson. Okay. And he does not, with that offensive line, with that running game, he will not have to win, have to go out there and win too many games by himself. Their schedule, though, is very difficult. You know, Boise State will not be easy, though. I do think they will beat Boise State come Labor Day night in at FedEx. They're at Miami. They're at North Carolina, home to Georgia Tech. So not an easy schedule, and they could possibly meet up with Florida State in the conference championship. It's not out of the realms of possibility for me to think that they can go undefeated and play for a national championship. I'll be amongst one of the teams that's playing for a national championship. I think I look at Virginia Tech. I look at Frank Beamer. Good piece on him in USA Today about, you know, him basically accomplishing everything but winning a national championship. And he basically has, this is a legit top 10 program. It just feels like this is their year to go out there and really compete for a national championship. They've been good for so long. This, to me, is from top to bottom, this is their best team they've had since the Michael Vick era back in 99 and 2000. I'm thinking of 1999 when they lost to Florida State in the national championship. I really like Virginia Tech a lot this year, and I'll be shocked if they're not playing in a BCS game, and they could be playing in a BCS championship. Look at Miami. Miami's going to have a big time offense. A lot of people are thinking Miami can challenge for not only a ACC championship, but a lot of people think Miami can be one of those outside challenges for a national championship. I don't think they're quite on that level yet. I do think Miami can be a top 10 team. Ja'Cory Harris has a chance to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. Problem with Miami is their schedule is just, it's ridiculous. I mean, they're at Ohio State, next week, at Pittsburgh, who certainly will not be, who's going to be chomping at the bit coming off a loss in Utah. At Georgia Tech, won't be easy. Florida State home, won't be easy. Virginia Tech home, North Carolina home. And that doesn't even include possibly the ACC championship. Being in the same division as Virginia Tech certainly is not fun at all. That division that they're in is by far and away the strongest of the divisions as far as the ACC goes when you look at it. I mean, that division, you have North Carolina, that coastal division with Virginia Tech, Miami, North Carolina, Georgia Tech is easily tougher than what division the Atlantic division that Florida State is. That is a brutal division. Unfortunately, Miami is in the same division as Virginia Tech. And I do think that Miami will be playing on the January 1st bowl, but I don't think that they're going to be in the ACC championship. I see them, they'll have a year, they'll win 10 games, 9, 10 games, and they get played for in a January 1st bowl. Look at Florida State, they don't have a big-time offensive team. They have a ton of talent, have one of the best offensive lines in football, a guy in Christian Ponder who can be another Heisman Trophy candidate. They have good skill positions at the running back and wide receivers. Their question is their defense. And as far as I'm concerned, their defense can't be any worse than what it was last year under Chuck Amano and Mickey Andrews, who are like fossils and like dinosaurs. And to me, that would be almost addition by subtraction, not having those guys run the defense anymore. I think Florida State is on their way back. I might be biased as a Florida State fan, but you look at the recruiting classes, look at Jimbo Fisher being that coaching way for 2 years, I think was an advantage for him, taking him as a transition into being his first full year as the head coach. Look at the recruits Florida State is already getting since Jimbo Fisher became the head coach. I expect them to win their division. I expect them to play Virginia Tech in the ACC championship. They will have a chance to beat Virginia Tech, but I would like Virginia Tech to win that game. But Florida State, again, they have a great, great offense, and they'll be exciting. It'll be an exciting year for Florida State, though. They're not ready for national contention yet, but I really believe that they will be in a January 1st bowl. They have a brutal schedule as well. I mean, they've home to Florida, home to UNC, at Miami, at Oklahoma, have BYU at home, and BYU will be looking for some revenge. Last year, Florida State, in one of the few games that they actually played well in, went to BYU and destroyed them 54-28. So certainly BYU will be looking, you know, for some payback. But again, I would expect that 2011 Florida State would be top five in a legit national championship contending team. That's how much I think that they are on their way back. And I expect a big year out of Florida State, big year out of Christian Ponder. The wild card team, and I'm end up having to change this because they might not have a team for them in terms of how, depending on what these suspensions are going to look like over the course of the season. But the wild card team I thought coming out of the ACC would be North Carolina. I thought they had the best defense in college football. I thought all they had to do was get some, you know, decent, a little bit of offense out of T.J. Yates and the running game, and that they would be a team that nobody in the ACC, whether it be Miami, Florida State, or Virginia Tech would run any part of. It could take any one of those teams out. But right now, I mean, who knows if any of those guys are going to be able to play, and how many games are they going to miss? So I guess I would have to go down and look at Georgia Tech as being a possible surprise team. From the time, you know, the quarterback Josh Nesbitt, having him back at quarterback, still having a pretty good running game with that. Nobody has figured out that triple option, their offense with those three running backs. I know they lost the wide to the NFL, but they're year in, year out, they're going to lead amongst the nation's leaders in rushing. So I guess I would have to say Georgia Tech would be a team to certainly keep your eye on as far as, you know, being one of the teams that can knock out one of the other top teams in the ACC. Again, this is a big year, a put up or shut up year in terms of the ACC. The ACC needs Virginia Tech to possibly challenge for a national championship, and they need Florida State and Miami to have big years, and they'll get their chance. I mean, a bunch of these teams have tough non-conference schedules. You look at Florida, Miami, Florida State. You look at their non-conference schedule. Florida State is at Oklahoma September 11th. Miami is at Ohio State September 11th. You have Virginia Tech hosting. Virginia Tech basically in a home game is Boise State. You know, Georgia Tech plays Kansas. Georgia Tech plays Kansas. North Carolina's playing LSU, which I almost had to talk that game out, but it's still going to count. Miami at Ohio State at Pittsburgh as well. So, the ACC will have a chance. And of course, Georgia Tech will play Georgia. At Georgia in the last game of the season, they always play Georgia on that last Thanksgiving weekend. So looking for a big year out of the ACC. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call, the Vikings, Cowboys, and Jets. I'll tell you what those teams have in common and exactly what are the Arizona Cardinals doing. I will explain to you what I think they're doing with their quarterback situation. We'll talk about that, and we will wrap up the show on the last segment of time, and also stories from the Observe. And if you're a New England Patriots fan, I think you'll know where I'm going with this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, real quick, taking you to the top of the hour, 10 o'clock, not 50 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. And you look at, of course, the NFL came out with his preview issue this week. Peter King has the Steelers and the Packers. If the Steelers beat the Packers in Super Bowl 45, I can see it. I'm not so completely sold on the Pittsburgh offensive line, but again, 2 years ago they didn't have a good offensive line either, and they still found a way to win Super Bowl. So if they can survive these first four games, even if they're 1-3, that wouldn't be the worst. That wouldn't be the worst thing. Still, we have 12 games left to get their act together, and they've shown. We've seen in football, all you have to do really is go into the playoffs and go into the playoffs healthy, and you have a shot. No matter where you finish, home field advantage or not, you have a shot to make moves when it comes playoff time. So, and the Packers, I definitely could see making a Super Bowl. I mean, the Packers are loaded, especially offensively. They have questions with that secondary. If they can get that situated, they should be fine. But I definitely think the Packers are the class of that division without question. But we'll have one of the top 2 or 3 records in the NFC. Probably, I would say the Packers will be one of those teams with home field advantage in the NFC. But the 3 most talked about teams of this offseason have been, in order, the Jets, Vikings, and Cowboys. The Jets with the Revis situation, Vikings by far, Cowboys just because they're the Cowboys. And again, what these teams have in common, obviously, they are enormously talented and have as much individual talent as any teams in football. They have 3 quarterbacks who are at different stages in their careers, and they have been, again, it has been talked about day in, day out. I don't think we've had a day. We haven't had one of those teams mentioned in the sporting, over the internet or since probably April. And I'm going to make this prediction. I don't think any of these 3 teams will play for a conference championship. And I will go as far as to say that one of them, maybe even 2, but one of them will not make the playoffs this year. And if you have to make me choose that one, it probably would be the Vikings right now. A lot of question marks with the Vikings. Favre Bengal, no Sidney Rice, Percy Harvin. Secondary is a mess. But I just, when you're going through the course of an NFL season, you have enough to deal with injuries, with losing tough games, the travel, the physical wear and tear. You don't need the extra. And these teams, all 3 of these teams are full of extra. As far as the personalities on the team, as far as whether it be Rex Ryan, everything that surrounds Brett Favre, just the Cowboys in general, Jerry Jones, Tony Romo. And truthfully, just from a football standpoint, these teams have, all 3 of these teams have some major issues. I mean, listen, I don't care what the Jets say about, we're a team and we don't build around one player. They are not going to a Super Bowl or even an NFC Championship without Darrell Revis. I mean, Darrell Revis makes their defense as far as them being able to take away one half of the field. The Cowboys have some major issues with their right side of the offensive line. Yes, Flo-Daire Adams was Mr. Penalty and Mr. Offside, but they also don't have an adequate replacement for him. The Vikings, Favre could be on his last will right now. Who knows? Who knows what you're going to get out of Favre? And who knows what you're going to get? Again, that's secondary. And they're in a tough division. I mean, the Bears are not going to be a pushover. We already talked about the Packers. And Detroit is not going to be a pushover this year. Detroit is going to have, a very good year. I told you earlier when I was previewing that division, Detroit is going to be, 6-10, 7-9. I think Detroit is going to have a very, they're going to be one of those teams that are going to be with that front four they had defensively, Gundenbosch and Sue. Again, I think none of these teams will reach the conference championship of their respective conferences. I don't see it. As far as the Arizona Cardinals goes with their quarterback situation, I'm just trying to figure out what direction that they're trying to go in, that they're going in right now, and what exactly does Matt Leiner, what is it with the relationship between Matt Leiner and Ken Whitsunhunt? Matt Leiner, again, I've never been a Matt Leiner fan, but I mean, you're benching him for Derek Anderson. I mean, look what I mean, benching him for Kurt Warner is one thing, two-time MVP, future All-State quarterback, that's one thing, but Derek Anderson. Has Ken Whitsunhunt watched Derek Anderson in the last 2 years? Or is he just looking at tapes from 2007 over and over again? I don't get it. I mean, you got to get Leiner some leeway. I mean, at least let Leiner lose the job. Yeah, I mean, he's not even getting off passes in the preseason. Derek Anderson has attempted about twice as many passes as Leiner has. And, you know, you're saying, well, our offense hasn't been as productive as we think it should be. Well, I mean, Derek Anderson hasn't exactly ripped up the preseason as well, if we're going based on that. So, again, I'm trying to, and it's, you know, he's saying it's not about the stats. Well, Derek Anderson is a great leader now. Derek Anderson brings intangibles to the team. What intangibles? So, I don't understand what's going on with that particular situation. Leiner should be starting, but it sounds like he's going to be traded, which good luck with trying to trade a guy who's been benched for, a guy who is a backup quarterback in his own right. Good luck with that one. Brandon Spikes gets caught in a sex tape. And again, I don't understand what the NFL is going to do with this. How does that fall in terms of the NFL code of conduct? So, it'll be very interesting to see how Roger Goodell handled this. It was clearly, I've seen the pictures, it was clearly Brandon Fikes with a girl, you know, with a girl who didn't have a lot of clothes on. So, again, you know, some people want to make this a race issue because the girl was white. If the girl was black, it wouldn't be a big deal. I don't know if that's the case. But, again, I'm not a line of just stupidity by these guys who don't think that stuff can get over the internet in this world of just and technology and how things, it doesn't surprise me, but again, I'm wondering how the NFL deals with this in terms of how it falls in terms of the NFL conduct code. I mean, what page is that on? Enjoy your week. I will see you next week on the next edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.